much for being on board. Glad to have you with us and appreciate the goodness of the Lord on a Tuesday. Yeah, on a Tuesday. And so we're glad to have you with us. Again, let me mention that we have got traffic problems. And it is I-40 eastbound right there at the Clyde exit coming back toward Asheville. And so right in that section there, they're working on that. And it's the West Canton exit, you know what I'm talking about right there? And Champion Drive, where it comes under. Yeah, right there. That's Ken Wilson Ford. From the Clyde exit all the way to there, traffic is very slow, and they show that they're working on it. And so that's probably the culprit this afternoon. But I wanted to mention that starting out, and that's coming toward town. If you're in town, things are moving pretty good, but there is a wreck on Patton, and I think it's right there at Sam's Red Light. And that's what it looks like. I think it's right there in that intersection, and I can see it traffic backing up toward the bridge, and I can also see it backing up into the loop. People trying to get off of 240 to get onto Patton Avenue westbound, and then I see some back up the road that's going toward Sam's. So it's right there in that intersection, apparently causing some problems, okay? And so just mention that. And then in town is about normal. Matter of fact, it's not quite as heavy as normal. And I'm looking to see if anything else is going on. And I don't think I see anything else here in the mountains that that bears talking about. Let's see about Greenville. Well, that's unusual. Let me make sure I've got the latest. Yeah, that's unusual. There's nothing to talk about in Greenville. And that's an unusual thing. Of course, now back in when COVID was so bad, this was every day. I mean, traffic, poor old traffic people, you know, about went out of business because there wasn't nothing to talk about. So, but anyway, it is because traffic was so thin. But right now, nothing to talk about other than I-85 southbound up around Cowpens. That's still under construction there. And there, of course, is a detour as a part of that. All right. Let me see what happened to my... There it goes. Here we are. I was trying to find... I'm missing a mouse. And when they're not... In radio, you learn to do everything without looking. You just reach and get things. But when somebody moves something, then... It throws you off really badly because you have to work radio by touch. Yeah. Matter of fact, I've known some blind DJs who did a very good job. And it's because it's the same thing, the same place, the same thing every day. And your muscle memory takes over and you learn to do that. 63 degrees is what I'm showing here outside the studios right now. And I was trying to see what's going on over there. Oh, there is a, what about that? A winter storm watch for the Tennessee border mountains with North Carolina. Didn't see that coming. Yeah, and this is for the counties as low as Monroe County, Blount County, Sevier County, also Cock County, and then on up into Greene County, and then Unicoi, and then all the way up in Carter County. And follows the Appalachians. It's on that side, on the west side of the Appalachian chain, and they're under a winter storm watch, for what may be coming in tomorrow night. And by the way, they're not the only ones that's in that. Winter weather advisories from the Kentucky line all the way back up through Kentucky into, just south of Cincinnati, that whole section through there, they're under winter weather advisories. And then as we look down toward the eastern part of the state, let's see here, what is that? Most of that's beach stuff, gale stuff that they're talking about. But there is a chance of some winter weather down in the coastal sections. Let me just kind of share why. We're under a big high pressure, and the cold air is running down through the lower elevations. And so there's cold air. Well, just for instance, now this is unusual. We're at 63, Raleigh is at 46. Winston's at 44. And there's low 40s all over. So that cold air is coming down the Appalachians, and it is circling back in, and we get what called a damming effect. And so it gets up against the mountains. It's cold. It stays down low. The warmer air is up high. So it's colder in the Piedmont of North Carolina and the Piedmont of Virginia. It's actually colder. It's colder on the coastal of Virginia than it is here. And so now you add precipitation to that, which there's a funnel boundary that runs, well, I was going to say it runs I-20 corridor, but it don't miss it far. But there is a frontal boundary that is that goes kind of from Atlanta up toward I-95 and across 20 and then up 95 would be a way to describe it. And then there's some precipitation that may ride that, and of course there's some snow may result in that. So we'll see how that turns out. Weatherman says that for us, yeah, it's not out of the question. It's in the forecast. I mean, the word's there. It's all about timing. And this has changed since I did the forecast earlier today. For tomorrow night, we were looking at a 70% all night with a low of 27. So that right there told us what we needed to know. You know, that's going to be plenty cold enough to snow. But now they have reduced that. So the rainy portion, about 70% chance, but the snowy portion dropping to only 40%. Yeah, so a little bit of a chance of something, you know, some chance of rain later tonight. Rain likely tomorrow, patchy, in and out, 52, so the temperatures are fine. It's tomorrow night when that cold air gets here, drops us down. And, of course, we're waiting to see what that, you know, how much rain's on the ground, how quickly it freezes, and to see what the commute Thursday morning is going to look like. Yeah. So whether we get a lot of snow or not, if it rains up into the night and drops to 27, that is a hard black ice freeze. So just everybody keep your eyes posted. And that's for here. Keep your eyes watching Thursday morning, because the high on Thursday is only 42. 22 Thursday night, 48 Friday, 26 Friday night, 46 Saturday, and then Saturday night, low right at freezing, and a chance of rain again. And so we'll keep our eyes on that one, too. I think it's not going to be cold enough. Think it's not, but we'll watch it. The high on Sunday is only 48. So they're not mentioning snow on Saturday night. They're just saying rain, but 33 and rain. So we'll watch it and see what happens. You see, if you've got cold air aloft, then it can snow much higher than 32 degrees. It can snow a big snow at 36, 38, as far as the surface temperature is concerned. But if that's generated from the Gulf and you've got warm air aloft, even falling into cold temperatures, it would have to get on down below freezing, and that would create freezing rain if it's right at the surface. If there's a little thicker layer, that would create sleet. And then if you have a thick layer of cold air, that creates snow. And so that's how that works. How much cold air do you have? But if you've got warm air aloft and it's coming down, then you're, you know, if your coldest temperature's right on the ground, not much chance of anything there other than freezing rain or maybe possibly a little bit of sleet with that. All right, and we're going to be kind of on the cool side. Our 50s are probably out of here. Well, 62 today. I mean, that's gorgeous. So you won't see that no more. And we'll have 52 tomorrow, and you won't see that again for at least a week. You're looking at 20s and 40s for a lot of it. Yeah. So a big, big change in the forecast, more to January type weather. All right. Let's look quickly. AM 720 today being sponsored by Danny and Beth Jenkins. It's a memory of their parents, Reverend Walt and Blanche Jenkins, who passed away on January the 26th, 2013. And in memory of Carl and Nancy Arvey. We want to salute the memory today of the Arveys and also the Jenkins. Thank you so much, Danny and Beth. We appreciate you sponsoring this day last year during Share-a-thon 2020. Thank you for doing that so very much. Speaking of that, we are only 33 days away from the 2021 virtual Share-a-thon. And somebody said, what's that? What is a virtual share-a-thon? Well, for folks who normally listen, who normally watch, things will be very little difference. But instead of having the way share-a-thon has been, okay, so let me define it. Share-a-thon has been a camp meeting that we televise. It's been a camp meeting that we broadcast. And that's the way it's always been. It's always been a camp meeting that is broadcast. This year, sadly, it is going to change, and it's going to be more of a made-for-radio, made-for-television production, primarily because we don't have the audience. Yeah, we're not going to get to have the audience this year. We're not going to get to have people come on site. And due to the COVID restrictions that are in place and due to some other things that are going on, it just doesn't make sense for us to bring in the crowds that we typically have. You know, and it's nothing for us to have 450 people on Sunday night in the rally. That's not unusual. It's not unusual for us to feed, you know, a couple of hundred, you know, sometimes 250, you know, for lunch and then another 250 for supper. It's not unusual for that to happen. So we're pretty packed out. We have a huge facility, 24,500 square feet, and we fill up every square inch of it and the parking lot and all the patios and the warehouse and all the parking lots. And that's Share-a-thon, okay? That's Share-a-thon, and we love it. But this year, because of the virus, we had to make the call early on, and so far I've not seen anything that would cause me to change my mind. We still have folks. We had a pastor friend while I was gone. Terry Whiteside went home to be with the Lord from COVID, and I've known Terry for a very long time. Twins, he and Terry and Jerry, lived down on the Boylston Highway and knew them ever since since junior high anyway. And nothing has changed my mind. So I said, well, the vaccine is coming. Yes, but it is not going to be, we still, just because you have the vaccine, it does not exempt you from social distancing, 6 feet apart, the mask, the hand sanitation, and all the rest. We simply are not going to be allowed by the government to occupy the building. They're saying 30% occupancy is what the governor is saying. And then they're saying no more than, indoors in the meetings. And I said, well, religious assemblies are exempt. Well, they are and they're not. And what I say by that is you're not exempt from the liability of it. Okay, just because we may plead the religious exemption and we may get out of the letter of the law, we are not exempt from the intent of the law. And so it's a very tough thing. So here's what we're doing. We're going to bring in all the preachers, mostly local preachers, bringing in, you know, for each service, we're bringing in preachers, but mostly local guys. And then we're going to be bringing in singers, and once again, mostly local singers, not all, but mostly local singers. And then we're going to have as much like normal, but you won't be able to come and watch. You won't be able to come and be part of the studio audience. And that hurts. It hurts bad. We had a meeting this morning, and what do you do when your head and your heart are in conflict? What do you do with that? I've fought that for a lot of time. I fought that through my ministry. What do you do when your head and your heart don't agree? I mean, my heart, you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have a virtual share-a-thon. But my head says you got to, because of all the risk and because of bringing people from other places in. It's dangerous. And so those that are in the services as far as singing, those that are preaching, they're allowed to be here. But outside that, no one else is. And so that's a hard pill to swallow. So we need your help. Like, I need your help. I need your prayers. I need encouragement. I'm telling you, I'm I'm so discouraged over it. And every time we turn the page, there's another wrinkle. And I'm trying to figure out how to, I mean, we've been doing it the same way for, you know, 33 years. And so, you know, it kind of grew into what it is now. We didn't sit down one day and just plan it. It happened. And so we kind of followed the mold. This year we had to break the mold. Everything's different. I mean, today I ordered masks, you know, for the staff. And I'm trying to find plexiglass to put up, you know. You realize how hard that is and how much that stuff cost? $129 for a sheet of 4x8 plexiglass. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. We got to have a bunch of them. And so, you know, and we are going to try to have some food for the, you know, for the crew that sings and for the preachers that preach, but that's all. And nothing open to the, so I've had to tell the soup man he can't come. The missionaries, they're not coming. The missionary tables, they're not going to be here. It's going to look like a ghost town. But that's for people who come. But for people who watch and people who listen, to by the grace of God, we are going to try to do as much like we have in the past and do as much as we can like we have. I had a preacher call me today and encourage me. And he told me about something he had read, so I looked it up. And let me tell you what John Phillips said. John Phillips said, we must do what we can, then God will do what we can't. Let me read that again. We must do what we can, then God will do what we can't. I've asked Daniel to make a slide. I want that up in one of the services. We must do what we can, and then God will do what we can't. Well, that's this Share-a-thon. He's still our hope, and we're going to do what we can, and then we're going to trust God to do what we can't. And that's all I know to do. And I thought surely this thing would be gone by now. I mean, I really did. I thought it'd be gone by now. But no. And I'm not sure it'll be gone by this time next year, just to be truthful with you. I'm just saying, well, it may be. They're wanting it to go away really bad. And so the powers that be, they want it to go away. So they're going to change how they test, and they're going to change a bunch of things. And by doing so, it may cut the numbers dramatically if they change how they test and change the norms by which they scale stuff. Yeah, if they do that, you'll see it go away, and it'll be a big victory for the administration. But it doesn't mean less people will have it. It just means the way that they count it. Let me just give you an illustration of that. In the city of New York, when it got so bad up there, and when we had the ship up there, the Navy ship, and when Franklin Graham had the field hospital up there, during 1 week, it was amazing. There were nobody had heart attacks in New York. Nobody died of strokes. Nobody died of cancer. Nobody died of car wrecks. All the deaths in New York for about a week or a little longer than that were all COVID. Now, you and I both know that's not the case. But the deal was they were getting reimbursed at the clip of about $40,000 per COVID death. And so doctors was riding on it, suspect COVID, and when they said that, it kicked it into that gear. And that's why those numbers went so crazy. Well, they're talking about now changing the way the dynamic of how you test. And if they do, they're talking about not using, you know, there's several things they're talking about doing. And now they're talking about even having to have double testing to confirm a positive. Well, if you do that, then yeah, you're going to have a lot less people. And I tell you something else that's going to happen. It's already happening. People won't go get tested because they don't want to be socially tracked. They don't want all of the things. And so I know a bunch of people who's had it, and they didn't go. Oh, there's no doubt that they had it. They had the classic symptoms. But they've never been counted because they don't want intrusion into, you know, their lives. So those numbers are going to go down, and it's going to be a big victory for the administration, but it doesn't mean that it's not that the virus is going away. Okay? So we're locked in where we are, and so we're going to go with it, and I appreciate your understanding with that. I do, and I appreciate that very, very much. And folks texting in, thank you. And thank you for that. I appreciate the encouraging words. Okay, let me take just a second here and welcome folks out in Los Angeles, California, Avon, Colorado, Augusta, Atlanta, and Clarksville, Georgia, Kokomo, Indiana, Waterloo, Iowa, Lexington, Kentucky, Plymouth, Minnesota, Ridgeland, Mississippi, Joplin, Missouri, Belmont, New Hampshire, and then I've got them popping in and out. So Indianapolis just joined us, and Mount Laurel, New Jersey, Forest Hills, New York is with us today, Durham, Weaverville, Hendersonville, Brevard, Grassy Creek in North Carolina, Akron, Ohio, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, Piedmont, Easley, and Lancaster, South Carolina, Houston, Texas, just to name a few. And that is not all of them, but that's the ones I've got. And somebody tell me how to say that. Menomonee Falls? Maybe. Menomonee Falls, Wisconsin. So glad to have all these folks on board with us. And of course, you know I answer questions. That's something we do about every day. We take questions. And by the way, we welcome the country of Pakistan. Also welcome Wyoming that's watching, and also the state of Alabama watching this afternoon. Thank you for that. I guess I've got a question. Well, the question was that people were, the reason that Antifa was burning down the country was because that is Donald Trump. That was Donald Trump's fault. And it was Donald Trump's fault, the Black Lives Matter, and it was Donald Trump's fault for Antifa, and it was all Donald Trump's fault. And that's what everybody said. But I guess my question is that they now have a left-wing president. The left controls the Congress and the Senate, and they're still burning the towns down. And I guess I got a question. The left didn't mess with them because they saw it as politically beneficial to defeat President Donald Trump. And many of the rioters were a part of their base. We know that to be true as well. But I don't know what they're going to do. It don't look like they're going to do much. The press secretary said something about on the second day of the administration, they said something about the riots, but it was just kind of a slap on the wrist. But I'm just wondering what are they still rioting about? Why are they still burning stuff down? And they have done a bunch of stuff they've attacked all sorts of things, and they're still doing it, and it's still wild. Tacoma, Washington is where it's been so wild, the latest. And this was after the election. But it looks like to me, so I'm asking the question, what's the deal now? What are we still burning the town down for? What is our political expression at this point? And it just looks like, I mean, for me, it looks like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about domestic terrorism. And the people who broke into the Capitol, they were domestic terrorists. And I'm not going to argue with that. I saw some women and kids that didn't look like domestic terrorists. But I just say we're all about stamping out domestic terrorism. Well, it looks like that right now this domestic terrorism is all the right-wing domestic terrorist. It looks like that the whole thing on Capitol Hill, and it was awful, and I condemn it. But it looks like that they're using that to justify an assault on conservatives, even monitoring people who, supported the president. They are purging conservatives off of social media, and basically they have declared that about 74 million Americans have been radicalized by the Trump train, and we need to be deprogrammed. So in other words, the burning of towns has been politicized. So you go burn the town down and do whatever you want to at night, and that gets a byline on the back page of the news somewhere. But because it doesn't fit the narrative. You see what I'm saying? It's just giving that people passes. If you mean that left-wing bunch is tearing stuff up. It's just giving them passes. And it does not look like that justice is going to prevail. They don't do anything to them. All the vandalism, all the things, nobody's being prosecuted. Nobody's being arrested. They're just told, let them go. Let them tear up what they're going to tear up, and we'll fix it back. The taxpayers will build it back. That's what we're being told. So, yeah, I've got a question about that. Why the inconsistency? What's up with that? The inconsistency is pretty bad, okay? And it's pretty glaring. And so, and you know, I have people all the time saying, well, preacher, you know, this and this and this. I'm not going to address everything that's going on. It would take all day and all night to try to talk about everything that's going on bad. It's bad in droves. But I'm going to try to take some of the things that the mainstream media push to the side, and we're going to try to highlight some of that. One of the things that, you know, Bloomberg did talk about this, and they are typically pretty liberal. I will give them that. But Bloomberg has reported that Mr. Biden raised about $145 million from anonymous donors. And so the about $28.4 million raised by President Trump, but about $145 million from, it's called dark money. Now, that broke the record. There was $113 million in dark money on behalf of Mitt Romney in 2012. But what they do is they raise money through these PACs and these super PACs, and they do it through their nonprofit deal, and they switch the money over, and then they don't have to declare it. They don't have to quote it. They don't have to tell you where it came from. So, yeah. So altogether, Mr. Biden raised $1.5 billion for his campaign. That's a record by any standard, $1.5 billion. And the campaign legally cannot take more than $2,800 from an individual, according to the Federal Election Commission laws. But that number, that $1.5 billion, that includes $318 million from donors who gave less than $200. But the rest stem from donors who gave at least $825,000. And, of course, that money was split between the Biden campaign and the Democratic National Committee. So, overall, when you look at the numbers, the Democrats got about $326 million in dark money during the election cycle. And that is more than double what the Republicans collected. And again, it does not have to be reported. There's no laws that say it have to be reported. And so we don't know where it came from. And this happened during the election of Barack Obama. It happened during the re-election of Barack Obama. And now it's happened again in large numbers. And so, yeah, but nothing will be said about it. But I just thought you needed to know, okay? I just thought that you needed to know. Nothing's going to be said about it all because, you know, they have the power. But just going to say that there's something to consider, all right? All right. Well, appreciate Pastor, is it Aramis or Pastor Ruben? I'll just say it that way. Watching from the Philippines. Early morning, mabuha, umagandang umaga po, to the Philippine Islands. God bless you. Thank you for being on board with us. All right. Well, that's about all the time we're going to have today. I've got Bible college tonight. And the good news is that this time next week, we'll be on a full hour, a full quarter, three quarters of an hour until 6 o'clock. Our sign off will change as January leaves and we'll have longer days. We are glad for that. Of course, music and programming continues overnight on WGCR FM 94.9 and also on the app and on the website WGCR.net. We are certainly glad to have folks that stay tuned with us. Thank you so very, very much. We appreciate it from the deep of our heart. And we are so grateful for folks that have been faithful through the years. This is our anniversary week. If we live till Sunday, the station will have been on 34 years. 34 years Sunday morning, the 31st. So, 34 years of continuous broadcasting. And I say continuous. We were off the air way back in the day when we were 1,000 watt. We had a transmitter go down. We were off about 2 days. And I don't know until I flew parts in here from Chicago and finally got it fixed. And if we've been off any more whole days since then, I don't remember exactly, but we probably haven't been off 3 full days in 34 years. And that was due to technical trouble there, but I don't know we could do about it, you know. So God's been good to us. And, of course, now, because of your faithfulness last year, we have generators in place. We've got an old transmitter we're going to need to replace, but we're not going to talk about that this year just simply because of COVID and all the things. We have froze our budget, and it's actually increased because we've been paying for the subs as well as the folks working. Folks have been out sick, have not lost a penny in pay because of COVID. We've been paying them right straight through and believe that's God's plan. Father, would you continue to bless your people? Thank you for these years of broadcasting. We bless you in Christ's name. Amen and amen.